Welcome to Dr. Fred Bell's Health Science and Energy Show. And this would be August 8, 2009. And as we said yesterday on Friday's show with Steve Barish, that the book is available, the one-off, unabridged, will be available now for $88, and there will be 50 of them only for the $500 price with the $400-some-odd cover on it. It's beautiful. So anyway, it's a medieval cover. It's leather. It's amazing. These are the classic books. There's only 50. All serialized, of course. And that's the inside track, which we've been talking about for months. Actually, the making of it, years. So we're going to continue now with last week, and then we're going to put another little educational thing on here in a bit. So here we go.
This is a continuation of last week. And the next week. Thing that happens is when their gravity changes, their time changes too. Their time, the relationship with time begins to become not as concrete as the one that we live in. And we say, oh, that person is senile or whatever. Well, they're just changing states. They're going to another dimension. There's really nothing wrong with that. It's a natural fact of evolution. They feel they've had enough time in this plane or this dimension, and they're moving into another one. So, also occurring in the strike zone where this energy is coming and going, okay, is some of the energy that's worked off karma or spent itself. Remember, energy is not destroyed or created or destroyed. It's just only transmuted. The coming and going in the striking zones in the bodies creates a rhythm, which we call time. Time is a vibratory exchange rate of spirit and matter. Motion is the movement of the divine will being split by desire. Gravity is the recombination of the desire ascending to spirit after its expression through form. Anti-gravity, detachment, or impartiality is created by mind when it is disciplined to be free of desire, thus free of time zone on a particular plane of consciousness. However, all the time on all planes is interpenetrable. Each of the seven planes has its own time zone. From our point of view, the higher the plane, the slower the time. The struck zone interchange can be seen as a fusion or return of the kundalini as spirit releases itself into form, creating time. The law of inertia causes a downward flow, and the effect is the attraction of physical to physical, sort of bonding action. Basically, it's a sexual energy. In a highly developed individual, the organized force is in balance and moves out and away from the physical and creates the anti-gravity state of consciousness. Control of this energy comes from the mind via the upper mental plane when the lower mind stands aside and allows the higher mind to reach the astral and physical body. And of course, that's the discipline of yoga that we hear about all the time. Now, anti-gravity consciousness is being reached by people through various yoga disciplines, and a side effect of levitation is demonstrated. The yogis call this state of consciousness siddhi. In one area of public attention where this was happening is where people were taking advanced courses in transcendental meditation and are hopping and levitating in public, you know, demonstrations.
Have you seen this, by the way? I've never seen this.
Yeah, I've seen it. Not only have I seen it, but what we used to do, I have a system called a System 3 that's talked about in this book in one of our scientific catalogs. And what we used to do is we used to levitate people in the audience, and when we would levitate them, we would float them up in the air. I used to do this. Someday we'll do it in one of my seminars, but it takes a balanced audience to do it.
I would love to see. That must be great.
It is. It's fun. What happens is the experience, when I usually have the person that's going to be levitated visualize themselves as a cloud, and then what we do is we take, you know, four people, and we direct their energies into that one person, and that one person then lifts off and goes up over their heads. It's really fun to do. It's an incredible experience. And the people, when they come back and they come out of this little, like, state of being, you know, they say, wow, what a ride, you know. They really enjoy it. But, you know, when I started building the System 3, which is a huge structure, it was before the time machine that was built. This is what led into the time machine, because it was during these studies that we began to understand how time works and how a person can become free of time and how they become lighter. And this, of course, led to the research that made the time machine happen in later times, because everything that's going on here is happening inside the human body. So what we were trying to do figure out how this was happening and then duplicate it mechanically on the other side, you know, in the machine. And it was fascinating. When you came down to the house, remember those big tall structures you saw in the living room?
I'm not sure. No, of course I was...
Well, they had crystals in them. They were tall. There were four big structures in the living room there, like...
But you have so many crystals throughout the house, it's hard to know which ones you're referring to. You got that big one right there in the living room.
Right, well, around that were four columns, gold-plated pyramid columns.
Oh, wait a minute. The array of pyramids, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember those, yes.
Okay, those are irradiators. We used seven of those in a circle, and we would put people inside of them. What we would do is we would put the corresponding gemstone in the modulating chamber so that array, each particular one of seven arrays, was vibrating at one of the chakra rates, which then caused one of the endocrine glands to secrete hormones. And so we would use one of the seven gemstones in a clockwise or a counterclockwise direction, going around the room, depending on what we were trying to accomplish. That was how a system three worked. Then what we would do is put the person in the middle of the system, and we would put them on a chair. And then what we would do is we had a 50,000-volt ion generator, a negative ionizer, that connected to each one of these different irradiators and sent a rotational force field around it in a clockwise direction. And so you could just feel the wind alone, but it was a tremendous feeling in the body for this wind. This solar wind, this ion wind, was created. And plus we had all these crystals grounding out these different units. But the entire structure then was elevated to 50,000 volts. It wasn't just sitting at a grounded potential. And each one of these, one of seven machines, then transmit a vibration determined by the series of gemstones that are in it into one of the seven different chakras. And by controlling the rate of vibration and the sequencing of the vibration, the chakras then talk or address the endocrine glands. The endocrine glands in the body, as we discussed before, secrete hormones in a linear fashion up into the head centers, into the brain. The brain then releases feelings that causes the body to do things like levitate or time travel. Because just as you have feelings in your body created by sexual attraction or energy from the adrenals, from exercise or meditation, any of those energies, they're all determined by a sequence of different kinds of hormones coming from the endocrine system. So in order to accomplish a feat like levitation or time travel, all you have to do is resequence the hormones once again into the right field pattern that brings out that kind of a feeling. And it's very simple to do. But most of us are not in an environment where we're ever exposed to that, so our bodies are never positioned or trained to do these kinds of things, so therefore we think they can't exist or don't appear to be real.
Dr. Bell, we are just about out of time today. It is a fascinating topic. I hope we can go more into it.
Oh, yeah, it's the topic of my life. You know, it's my favorite thing I like to get into. Yeah, you can reach us for vitamins. We have the best vitamins in the world and receptor information at 891 Santa Ana Street in Laguna Beach. The zip is 92651. Or you can telephone area code 714-499-2603.
Very good. Dr. Bell, you have yourself a great weekend. I look forward to talking to you on Monday.
Great. And I look forward to having our seminar on November 14th with everybody out there, too.
Yes, indeed. By the way, how do they register for that?
We'll be announcing that about 10 days before the seminar.
Okay. Well, we can all look forward to that also. Dr. Fred Bell, we'll be back with you on Monday between 11 and 11:30. Have a great weekend.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Well, that was the end of that show, so we'll jump into another one here. It's fun to do these things. Brings back memories of the past. That was a good one, too, on the explanation of time. Because time is the differential between spirit and matter, the interchange between spirit and matter. That was some of the Pleiadian stuff. Now we're applying that more into physics today. We're on the quantum level, and the quantum meaning small, and the individual and the smallest. It's a whole other deal now, but we're having a lot of fun. So let's see what Jim and I are up to now. This is my other old co-host from the old days.
In the violet. So effectively, we feel the red in the morning.
Now we're talking about light today.
The vibration of red is felt towards the proton, or the Earth. And the violet is felt out by the electron. At sunset, this reverses. The violet felt over here, and the red is felt over here. The green is always at the center.
Okay.
Now, what happens to people is they get off this frequency. They become immune or desensitized to this. The red is maybe 3 bands in, and the violet is maybe 2 bands in. So they're inverted somewhere. So as a result, they have what they call environmental poisoning, allergies. A million other things are happening and diagnosed way, way, way down on the spectrum is where it's found, depending on the level of the consciousness of the society that's looking at the problem that's being created way down high. But if you remember, we were talking about the subatomic being at the top of the chart and the biochemical somewhere in the bottom. So what we have to do is look at this area immediately. You know why? Nobody knows, right? Because this is the intelligence of the nuclear membrane. This is exactly what the etheric part of the atom in the cell, the nuclear membrane. How many of you know what the cell is? In the center of the cell, right? The cell. Right in the center of every single cell is a nuclear membrane. And that cell is the energy that transmits itself again and creates another cell out here. It's called mitosis. Okay? Because the nuclear membrane can etherize an area next to it and then draw off protoplasm and cause a manifestation of itself and formating energy in the hydrogen atom. Of course, in the nuclear membrane, there's hydrogen, oxygen, carbon, and nitrogen. Okay? Do you understand that? Does anybody not understand? This is fundamental science. Not science as you know it, but fundamental science. This effect on this planet has a name, however, has been seen in physics. Very famous. Quantum mechanics. Discoverer Niels Bohr, called the Bohr effect. Okay? This is explained in hard physics and was discovered back in the 20s. Science knew that the hydrogen atom behaved that way, but failed to perceive its behavior in the cell and the body until very recently. Okay? So, what happens is, this device right here is radionic. Right? And going back to this picture in here, this means a whole lot to a German, right? Or a Russian. Because they are heavy in the perhaps psychology, they're heavy in the experimentation, they're heavy in the cloning, they're heavy in the developing, continuing on with the Aryan concept, because the Aryan concept does exist. Okay? So suddenly the Omnion is now a device that says that when the sun goes down, this doesn't happen in the presence of things that are tuned to it. This now means that we can run a steady vibration to the nuclear membrane of a cell, and it will behave in a calculated manner, and you can now address it, talk to it, and let it grow. Okay? That's one device that's in that catalog. And I'm not going to go into systems tonight, but that's just one device. That technology, as those of you that have seen my slide projectors and slide pictures that I sometimes present, has gone a long way beyond this conversation tonight. But I just want to emphatically say that's what's happening. Now, let me draw another picture now. Okay? Is everybody getting a feel for this? We're going to stop in a few minutes. Right. Right, because what happens is the next thing comes in. It's called energy follows thought. Okay? And that's the way society works. If you look over here, the physical plane, right? They accepted the astral now. We're still on the physical. If you look at the physical, okay, everybody accepts mass thought, right? Energy. Mass thought accepts the fact that it's solid. Whereas Newtonian physics dealt with the kinetic energy of solids, right? Back in the 16th century when they were dropping grapefruits and oranges off the Eiffel Tower. Right? Not the Eiffel Tower, but the Leaning Tower of Pisa. We didn't have an Eiffel Tower there. And of course, science was aware of liquids when we discovered water at some point in time. We knew about liquids. And science then, when it started boiling water, became aware of gas. So it wasn't a whole long, a lot of time when we realized these things. I think we really became aware of gas when World War II came along. We started using it in warfare, and we started piping propane and butane, and it began to blow up in people's homes when their furnaces and stuff was off. So people really tuned into gas. Then what happens is the ions came into, when the current photography came out, we began to photograph, for example, leaves. We'd tear a leaf in half, part of the leaf would be gone, and we would see an aura field where the leaf was. So we began to become aware of the presence of ionic. Then, of course, the other area, the hypermeta and physical, the hypermeta and proto elements of metaphysics, joined with the quark, hadron, and lepton theory, and we're now launching ourselves on the breach of the astral plane. Now, when we talk about saucers and spaceships, these are coming down off the astral plane to come into our society or to come into our world. And this point is the area that a few souls are reaching, so therefore it's a reality, but as far as the masses, they're still barely realizing the ions, so we're still four sub-levels away from the truth in mass, although we're being prepared for it very rapidly. So what I do is I create things that help us go up this ladder, because as soon as we get up to this guy, called astral, we're going to first of all learn about time. Second, we're going to learn about space. And thirdly, we're going to learn about presence. Our presence. The first thing that I learned in time travel, having built a time machine at one point in my life, was that there is nothing beyond where we are right now. There is nothing as far as what matter is combining into. There are energies beyond where we are, but they're invisible. They're not cohesive. They're uncohesive. So we have to move the mass energies up into that realm to have any kind of unity or anything that light will be reflected off of, so that we can even affect presence up there with the preconceived things that we have going on inside our heads now. And when this happens, we'll suddenly realize the astral plane. One of the things that Billy Myers had done to him was he flew back in time on this planet, and we got some pictures of dinosaurs flying around. And you'll be able to go back in time. And Paul's heard me talk a little bit about time travel and explain a few things about time travel. And that's a whole interesting world. The logic in our level doesn't fit, yet there are perfectly understandable explanations about going back into history, and what you can or can't do, and what the effects in the presence of the rest of the people that didn't go back are. And these are the kinds of things that I talk about to people when they're ready for those kinds of conversations. The astral plane has other things happening. The spiritual worlds are there, and realize religion is a crutch, so it manifests on the astral world. Then we move beyond the astral world into the mental plane. The mental plane also has seven sub-levels, but it's divided right in half. Logic, descending, and spontaneous, ascending, which launches us right up into the Buddhic world, the causal world, the higher world, where intuition is more firm than logic here. And on it goes, and there is no limit to it, because once we reach these seven levels of consciousness, we draw a line. Now we talk about cosmic consciousness. Kinds of forces that the nuclear membrane in the center of a cell and the center of the sun responds to. This is a whole other energy field. And then logoic consciousness, the center of the kinds of elements that create entire existences that come and go, called Prealeia and Manvantaric periods. So you begin to see the scope of consciousness is totally infinite, beyond anything that you could even think about. It's awesome, okay? And it's wonderful. So now, let's go back down to Earth again and just look briefly at time, for example, for a few minutes. And then we'll stop. In the brain, we were talking about switches taking place, okay? Now, let's say that we have certain set of hormones. We have the body right here. Okay? This person. And these different hormones are being secreted in different combinations. First of all, let's take a breath of fresh air. Okay, a breath of fresh air comes in. It stimulates the little passageways in the nose. The little hairs in the nose are connected to the pituitary gland. The pituitary gland has in it lysine and arginine. Remember we were talking about this chain of amino acids? Okay. When this electricity comes in, when negative ionization comes in, a breath of spring air, a waterfall, a forest, air going through the pine tree, a combination of these two amino acids has formed vasopressin. And this vasopressin then goes over here to the brain and closes certain switches and opens certain switches. This then causes the brain to fluctuate, the entire body to fluctuate, and the energy comes off the astral plane that the body would interpret as euphoria. It goes higher, it drives the body up in vibration. So that any kind of external stimulus coming into the body at that moment brings the body up in frequency, making it more etheric, and the feeling is ecstasy. Okay? Now that's a whole lot of things going on, but primarily started off with negative ionization and, of course, the presence of oxygen and rare gases to make all this happen, and assuming that the person had vasopressin. Now, this is a person that had no vasopressin, the person that drives the freeways every day, for example, and doesn't use ionization. They wouldn't have any vasopressin because the lysine and arginine would probably be fighting off viruses like herpes and other kinds of things that go around or some junk in the food. So the pituitary would probably be deficient. So this kind of person, if they were to be transported to a hilltop, wouldn't get much of a feeling out of it for probably 20 or 30 hours. Now their body could build up a supply of vasopressin. And this is called environmental acclimation. How many of you have ever gone up in the mountains skiing or swimming or whatever you do in the mountains, and you notice that the first two or three days you just sleep? And then on the second or third day you wake up and you start saying, "Hey, I'm alive and here I am." You know, you ever had that happen? That's because your body is so deficient in all these hormones that when it's in the presence of negative ionization, it can't function. So it has to build up the reserves of the chemicals in it to make it function electronically. Okay? It's that simple. It's not complicated, but it's real. It's very real. I know when I go to Hawaii, even with ionization, I usually sleep for two or three days. But when I go to the islands, I usually go to Oahu, crash on the north shore, listen to the waves crash in this place that I stay at for two or three days, and then head over to the other island. I don't even bother going to them first because it would be a waste of time. I'm not ready for them. You have to acclimate yourself. Now, this person, for example, were wearing a receptor. They might have actually connected another amino acid in here, and with the stimulation of negative ionization, may be able to bend a spoon or perform some other thing. Because you can set these vibratory things up higher up in frequency. One of the things I always talk about is that there's every time that you have this set of stimuluses, this changes to something else, you have to come in here and erase all of this in the brain. The biochemistry in the blood has to be erased. And one of the greatest erasers that I know is a hormone called acetylcholine. If you are a person that is going on a spiritual downer or you're tuning into the negative force, typically, by the time you've reached middle and old age, your pituitary and pineal glands will be calcifying. They'll be turning into calcium. And so as a result, your acetylcholine levels are gone. And this introduces Parkinson's disease. You start shaking and all these things start to go on. Because your body can't change vibration anymore. So it goes into a state of motor response. Okay? In my formulations, I put choline, several amino acids, all of the different ingredients that are necessary to produce acetylcholine, because one of the things that I was very emphatic on was the presence of acetylcholine being there to shift from one vibration to another. If you change from one pyramid to another, for example, you'll actually feel the changes and you need to go through this. Some of the ingredients that are in here are
lecithin, inositol, pantothenic acid. All the different things that produce rutin, B6, all of these things will produce acetylcholine. Matter of fact, there's a big drive on B6 for a while, but then when the AMA found it did help cure Parkinson's disease, they had a B6 scare. So these are the kinds of things that you'll see in our society as it programs negatively. Now let's take a person that's gone to an extreme route, okay? Let's say this person has been on a fast for a week and just taken about 4 or 5 doses of LSD, like Albert Hoffman did in 1948, for example. Now, what do you think happened there? Okay? And why are people turning to cocaine today, and pot, and all these other kinds of things? Well, these questions are answered biochemically, graphically, and spiritually in the back of my book, in the chapters on drugs. As a matter of fact, you can see all the different constituents of drugs and what they do, and why our society is into them, and the fact that we've always been into them, and what they're doing now versus what they used to do, and what they'll do in the future. But what happens is, if psilocybin is ingested, or LSD, it once again changes the vibratory frequency of the brain to such a pattern that the consciousness now slips up off the physical, up into the astral. And now observations are made in time, and you begin to see how time makes things happen on the physical. You have a different interrelationship now. Because what LSD or psilocybin does is it mocks up serotonin. Serotonin has a particular chemical grid. Just about look at it as a series of dots and dashes over here. Almost like the I Ching. Okay, it's serotonin. And what happens is, when the serotonin is displaced with something that's very similar, but not the same, the brain is now shifted off into another vibration. Now, if the person has been done like an Indian and prepared this as a sacrament, he may get a real set of conditions of the future, because he can see how the present will lead in the future. But if this person has decided to do this on a subway in downtown New York, where all the negative vibrations might be, in danger of being mugged or whatever, he will get the lowest view of the astral plane that you could possibly get, probably only see the amplification of your vibratory field and have a mild freak out or a major one, or actually go crazy. So you have to now take in the conditions when you go into what's called a high altered state prematurely, very rapidly, the circumstances and the outcome of what you're going to be subjecting yourself to. Because you have gone into another time where the mass of thought is in another, is in the present time. So you have spaced yourself out of dimension slightly.
What about another feature of
your barrier, it comes down, your resistance comes down. And you've exposed your more subtle bodies to an experience, plus or minus, okay? I've tried all of these things, I know about them, but they lead nowhere eventually. They're good for a time, and then they lead nowhere. And our society gets out of what's available at a point, you know, and the ones that learn from it grow from it, and the rest are destroyed by it. Simple as that. Because truth has a tendency to destroy ignorance very rapidly.
Well, they'll at the end of that one, so now we will go into the next thing. We got lots of things here today to jump through. We'll jump into, I think this is another radio show. And we're getting the best of all the worlds today. Let's see how this one goes.
That's why all the endocrine glands have their own individual colors.
There we go.
Their own individual cell characteristics. Any biophysicist or any biochemist, rather, can look at any organ in the body, and not just a piece of it, and he'll tell you that that's part of the liver, that's part of the adrenals. Because the science of cellular rejuvenation stems on the understanding that each individual organ forms its own level of consciousness and has its own chemical characteristics. The organs, of course, then form man over here. So we see a chain going right down the line. Now, same thing happens here. We have the earth,
We have an embodiment of energy, the Earth and the Moon in their relationship. It's called Logos. And this has a relationship with the Sun. The Sun, of course, has a relationship with another Sun, which is called the Pleiades. And just as an electron moves around a proton, and this rotates around this and so on and so on, so does our Sun go around the central spiritual Sun, the Pleiades, every 25,872 years. And this is an embodiment of a greater being of energy. It's a grand logos, the grand man of the heavens, and so on and so on. So both these principles are the same. We realize that we're a cell in a greater being. Begin to understand that. Now, going back to electricity, what's important to understand is this. The body reproduces cells continually. This system is constantly deteriorating. I often tell people about energy and form, and that is, it's right now it's 4:37 and 47 seconds. There is no 4:38. You'll create 4:38 just out of momentum from being here now at 4:37 and 14 or 15 seconds. So in order to do that, you've got to have electricity in your body, and you're going to regenerate 50 million cells in your body in 1 second if you're healthy. So every second, 50 million cells are being reproduced, and you need ions and electricity to do that. Unfortunately, we're running out of electricity in the atmosphere. That's where the body gets the electricity. It comes right out of the air, out of prana. We're running out. I'll explain that in a little bit. Now, basic electricity, like we show here, we're taking a piece of wire. And this piece of wire, what we're doing is we're connecting that to a battery. So here we have a piece of wire. We have a battery down here, a black box. It has a positive and negative terminal on it. Negative. The wire goes here. As soon as we connect the battery to the wire, the electrons start moving through here in the direction of negative towards positive, like this. And you have a magnetic field of current parallel to that. Now we can disconnect this and just have a piece of wire hanging right here and bring a north and a south pole piece of magnet up to the wire, and the magnetic field goes into the wire, and if you had a voltmeter connected down here where the battery was, you'll measure voltage in the wire. This is old science right here. So you begin to see that anytime there's electricity, there's magnetism. Anytime there's magnetism, there's electricity. So here I am wearing a pyramid, right? If I had a compass in my hand, I could hold it, I could measure the magnetic field of the Earth, and it has got wires on it. So there's obviously something happening when I wear this pyramid. Now the next thing, go ahead and put the next slide on there, Tom. The next thing we have to look at is alternating current, the science of vibration in the universe. Now, if we had a piece of wire here, let's say we had a magnet, north pole, south pole. Can you guys all see this? Okay. It has energy going, say, just for the sake of a statement here, let's say the energy goes from the north pole down to the south pole. There's a flow going that way. If you put your hand near, let's say if you had an iron hand, it would be deflected that way, right? So the energy is going this way continually, like a ball. Well, if that connected over here to a water wheel, like I've shown right here, and a piece of wire is set right here like this, when the wire is like this, by what is called mutual induction, the electricity will go in this direction. Now, if this magnet turns over and the south pole goes to the top, the north pole goes to the bottom, the electricity is the same in the magnet, or the energy is the same, but to the wire, who is an outside observer, this has changed and gone the other direction. So every time I turn the magnet over, the electricity will go in one direction in the wire and then turn around and go in the other way. That's called alternating current, back and forth, back and forth. Now, this change, this rate of change, has a number system called octaves or vibrations attached to it. And they're always divided into sevens. At one frequency it's sound, another it's light, another it's color, music. Everything we have is based on the frequencies of this change going on right here. Now in science, what we did is we produced this effect right here and then we applied it externally. This is an internal effect within the human body. This takes place inside the brain. This is the process of electrolysis whereby we metabolize the minerals, producing different vibrations. Okay, now let's talk about, let's say this is running at, say, one cycle per second. That means that the electricity goes to the right and the left, back and forth at a low rate, a low vibration. Now, certain things in nature happen at low vibration, low frequency. Example, algae, mold, bacteria occur at low frequency. Worms are low frequency devices, creatures of nature. So, let's take an apple tree for a second. And so what a pyramid can do in relationship to frequency on a very basic level. In the fall, the blood of the apple tree doesn't get out to the leaves anymore. In the spring, if the leaves are new, the sun is shining, and the leaf acts as a synthesis between the sap, which comes from the ground, and the sunlight, which comes from the sun. And the synthesis produces, of course, a flower. The flower then produces a pollen, and the bee, which is Venetian in origin, comes and pollinates the flower, and we produce an apple. So this is all high frequency. But as the fall comes, gravity starts pulling on an apple, bringing it back to the soil, and of course, as soon as the weather drops, the sap quits going up, and the apple can't get any more vitality, so it starts to fall off the tree. It comes down off the tree. Well, if we left the apple alone, it would lower its vibration because the tree was a life force. So when the apple hit the ground, it would start to deteriorate and degenerate, and pretty soon it would invoke the worm. Now, the worm can come either from the ground or from the eaters themselves. They come from either place, and they're invoked either inside the apple or they crawl externally into the apple, depending on a lot of factors. So let's say we take that apple off the ground before it rots, or a worm gets to it, and we cut it in half, put half of it underneath the pyramid, and call that a controller experiment, and put the other half, call it control, away from the pyramid. What will happen is the apple inside the pyramid will stay fresh for an indefinite period of time, maybe 6-8 months. The one over there will rot. Now, what will also happen, though, is the one inside the pyramid, even though it will stay fresh, it will lose its moisture unless you seal it. So the apple will be drying out without the interference of bacteria. Now, the federal government, when I put pyramids on people's heads back about, it was 6-7 years ago in New York City, the first time we did it back there, they got nervous because somehow or other, they didn't believe in pyramids, but they believed they would dehydrate heads or people. So very quietly, they didn't want to just challenge me because I wasn't making any claims, but they didn't know whether to challenge me on that or not, and they knew that to make one of these stupid claims against somebody like myself without first documenting it, they'd have a lot of problems because I was one of them, and I'd been for 10 years. So they spent very quietly, they took some of my pyramids, and they spent $1 million in several different universities, funding 10 different universities, to find out and prove that maybe I was wrong. Well, at the end of all of this funding and all this behind the scenes that they were doing, the bottom line was when the pyramid is worn on the head, it raises consciousness. So they turned the report over to Pat Flanagan, who's now editing and writing a book about how the government found that wearing a pyramid raises consciousness. So that was quite interesting, you know. So anyway, I'm just pointing that out because they do not cause dehydration. They only allow evaporation without the interference of bacteria. That's a misnomer that has arisen many times. Now, we'll start speeding this thing up. This water wheel now speeds up to 60 cycles per second. 60 cycles per second, the field builds up and collapses, and you get to where you can now hear it. And this continues on up to about 16,000 cycles. Now, if you look at the diagram, I've got the water wheel. Let's look at the magnet. Here's the north and the south pole. And we connect, here's a magnet turning over here. We connect this to a wire, and we ground out one side of the wire. Then if we have over here another coil just sitting there, wound like that with the ground on it, and we run this over, let's see here, a permanent magnet here, to the north and the south pole, and then we put a piece of cardboard on the magnet. So when this energy goes north, this goes south, this will go south, this will go north, and back and forth. What will happen is this coil over here will pull this magnet back and forth. And when this magnet is pulling back and forth, it pulls this big air core back and forth, and it releases sound. That's how a speaker works. You know, and so you can transmit sound that way, like a loudspeaker. Now, the human ear works exactly backwards from that. It receives vibrations coming through in the sound spectrum, which moves the diaphragm. The diaphragm then is attuned to a small network which connects to a nerve. The nerve, of course, goes into the brain, and the brain is the detector. to move at and determine. The detector, of course, is programmed when you're a child by sounds. You ask your mother or father, whatever, what this sound represents, what that sound represents. They give you a response that conditions, and that is a conditioned response, and this is a comparator. You can go on and on with brains, you know, but this basically is what's happening. So we have the same thing going on, and then we have seven different patterns of sounds before the sounds start overlapping one another, and these are called octaves. And of course, you all probably know the A, B, C, D, E, F of the musical scale. Now, the human sound, the human ear can only hear, by most people, can only hear about 16, 17,000 cycles per second. Dogs will hear 20,000 cycles per second. Dolphins will hear 100,000 cycles per second because they have a higher rate of exchange. So we can't say that the sound is limited at what we hear. We can only say that sound has a certain range, and we are limited by what we can perceive of sound. So when we go on past sound, then we go into the next frequency. We can continue rotating this now to say millions of cycles per second or half a million cycles per second. Well, when that happens, another thing begins to happen. Here we have a piece of wire. Remember the wire, we're vibrating now. The energy is being created. Every time the North Pole goes by, every time the South Pole goes by, we have energy over here. The faster that generator rotates, the faster this transition of this electron goes back and forth in here. It goes back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. So the faster the wheel goes, the faster this goes. Well, pretty soon you start getting into a situation of stress. Just like we have stress in our bodies, we have stress on vibrations. And as we build up vibration, these crests between the positives and these crests between the negatives get shorter and shorter and shorter and shorter. So we go to a shorter wavelength. Well, when they reach a certain length, what happens is they react off the Earth, because the Earth has a magnetic field, and they're propelled out into space. And this is called free propagation of radiation. And when this takes place, we transmit, you know, radio frequency, we transmit television frequency waves all around. It also takes place inside our heads, too, and we're able to transmit thoughts back and forth, but that's usually a different process than what I'm describing now. Now, finally we go so fast with our vibrations here, the wavelength, the energy is so high that the waves get so short that they become light. And the eyes are high-frequency antennas that receive high-frequency magnetic energy, and so we see visible light. Now, within that spectrum are seven basic octaves or vibrations of light. The same as in the sound spectrum, there are seven different vibrations of sound. And, of course, we have the color band or the musical band, okay, which is A, B, C, D, E, F, diatonic scale. Wherever frequencies relate to one another, you know, in vibration, depending, it doesn't matter how far apart the vibration of the spectrum is, there are always seven crossing points in every spectrum, and these are called the octaves of that spectrum, okay? And we're going to talk about these things. So you've all got that down, your basic stuff, because where we go from here is the utilization of this very basic knowledge. And this, by the way, is about fifth and sixth grade science. Okay, that's about the level that this is taught at, fifth and sixth grade so far. Okay? So don't think I'm out in the twilight zone. I'm going in the twilight zone, but I'm going to ground you out first. Okay? Next slide now.
Now let's talk about ionization. Now this is another form or another application of the same thing in a different way. Here we're going to ionize something, like we do in these machines here. So when I talk about ionization, I always give you an example of expansion through water. If we take a pan like this, place it on the stove, first of all, the water, let's say we've got a block of ice in it. Okay? In a block of ice, we have a relationship between a proton and an electron, meaning it's a ground state. This is as close as it possibly gets, and its spin rate is very slow now. It's not going around very fast. That's why it's solid. As soon as we put heat, we turn the heat on the flame, we start putting heat, the ice melts, the spin rate increases, and centrifugal force. When you increase the spin rate of an electron, centrifugal force forces it out. So, as a result, the water expands. It gets bigger and bigger. If you ever freeze a bottle of milk and then thaw it out, it'll blow up because the expansion, it will overreact. So it comes out and starts to move away. We continue putting the heat on it until pretty soon the
the steam starts to come out of the pan. The electron no longer is in the orbit here. It goes right out and goes across and goes on the window pane. Makes water over there. That's called ionization when it goes out. It produces positive ions in the pan and negative ions wherever it bombards. Now this has an effect, a dramatic effect on our bodies. Okay, now go ahead and change it. Okay, air ions were getting attention as early as 1754. And Stephen Gray, a medical doctor, discovered electricity in the human body in 1730. So it was only a few years later that they already knew in modern science, back 200-300 years ago, about ionization. But no one talked about it. It was just kept kind of quiet and currently went along. Now we find that negative ions, how many of you in here, by the way, know about negative and the positive ions? How many of you studied them to a degree? How many don't know anything about them? How many of them are hitting you cold? Okay. Negative ions are beneficial to health. Positive ions are responsible for many of our ills. Clinical studies have demonstrated that positive ions can aggravate sinus, asthma, rhinitis, polyneuropathy, inducing headaches, fatigue, and dizziness. Positive ions just cause all types of respiratory diseases, right down to the point that 1 out of 3 Americans going down with cancer, 2 out of 3 of them is lung cancer, about 0.1 out of is colon and the rest is miscellaneous. So the largest thing today is lung cancer caused by positive ionization. Okay, go ahead and change it now again. Now, one of the first people to really do research and present something to America was Dr. Kornbluh at Northeastern University. And he did a significant thing to the medical profession at the time he did it because he was dealing with burn patients. And when a person is badly burned, they're in danger of pain. And they're also, so the first thing a physician will do, the first thing in a code of physicians is, if you take the Hippocratic Oath, is get rid of the pain. That's number one. Well, a person that has a burn all over his body is in danger of dying from heart attack because the heart gets full of the dead tissue. They can't get through this delicate passage where the different ventricles. So they're in danger of heart attack. So the first thing a physician would do up until this time with this man was give morphine shots. Morphine is the greatest painkiller we know of for pain, especially a burn. But morphine has the side effect, and that is cardiac arrest. So the people were being placed in double jeopardy. So it was a very significant discovery to not have to use morphine anymore to alleviate, just to go to a little black box in the distribution network that we have here and relieve all the pain. That's what he did. And then, of course, his first case was when a dive vat exploded on a Philadelphia waterfront, and they brought the people in, and they found that 85%, as a matter of fact, of all the victims treated, they found that the pain went away in 10 minutes. The healing was much faster. There was no scarring. There was no need for skin grafting, and it just went on and on and on and on. Blood pressure was lowered, and a million different things started to happen. Okay, go ahead and change it out.
Well, we're just about out of time here. The time is really popping along, as you might say. So anyway, I don't know if there's anything on the other side we can start. I will check it and see, because we've only got a few more minutes left here anyway. And let's see, it's been almost 50 minutes. So there's probably not enough time to do any more. No, there really isn't. So next week, we look forward to seeing everybody again on this Friday night live show and the Saturday night tape show was semi-taped, I guess you could say, on this case of this one. Also, if you get a chance to go to the BBS archives, I highly recommend it because you should listen to last night's show because this mandatory flu shot phenomenon is becoming very paramount to look at in the fact that it's now been officially disclosed on the undercurrent channels of prominent scientists that they have through this chemtrail program, and I remember when they're releasing the viruses, have put vectors in the atmosphere that will be triggered to when you take the vaccine to have the H1N1 flu. And this is a depopulation, and it will have permanent genetic DNA effects on you if you do not use some type of devices that will neutralize their negativity. And, of course, this has to be done quantumly, and we are in holographically. And luckily, we do have a couple of devices, the nuclear receptor and the projector, will help you, along with our parallel trace mineral formula, which I highly recommend, because it will get rid of the heavy metal poisoning that's taken place in the atmosphere, which has been microscopically ground up, as you would say. The new book, we've talked about, The Inside Track. I haven't got the subtitle written for it yet, but it goes into print next week, so we're taking orders now. The earlier people to order will get the lower serial numbers, which will be more valuable. The cost for the first 700, the only 700 we're going to print on that level is $88, and then after that we'll print, we have 50 available with the very exclusive cover, and that those will be available for $500. These prices may seem a bit high on the $500 book, but when we printed the 444 first copies of Death of Ignorance, we sold those for, I think, around $70 or $80, and they ended up maybe even less than that in those days. It was back in 1979. They ended up going for well over $1,000 now, so I don't know what to say about all that. I guess people like these funny books I write. After the 750, then the publisher will pick up the book. It'll probably be edited, abridged. It's unabridged now. It's already edited, but it'll be abridged, meaning made smaller, because it's a huge book. 450 pages is a lot of book when you look at the small print. So anyway, I hope you've enjoyed Dr. Fred Bell's Health, Science, and Energy show, and look forward to seeing you next week.